Hey, didn't we bury a protoculture matrix around here somewhere?
Activate.
Welcome to episode 14 of the Echoes from the Wrist podcast. As always, I'm Chris Perrin, and I'm the Myrmidon pilot scouting out everything you need to know about Palladium books. Today we've got a really great interview for you. I was able to sit down and talk to Jason Marker, who is a staff writer and the freelance coordinator for Palladium Books. He's written both the Masters and the Macross Saga, and we're going to sit down and talk to him about those two books, as well as some of the other projects that he's worked on. Now, like some of the interviews we've had in the past, this one, all told from end to end, took about an hour to do. And, well, I try to keep these shows down to about 30 minutes, so what I've done is I've broken up his interview into two pieces. In this first one, we talk a lot about Macross and Master Saga. We talk a little bit about Warpath. We get into some cool alternative rules for GMs. And really, we just get a look at who Jason Marker is as a writer. I think it's really interesting. I really enjoyed talking with Jason. There's not going to be a lot of me in this episode. There will hopefully be a little bit more next time. And I'm hoping to get at least one or two freelancers to come in and talk about the open house. So there will be one more episode before the open house where I'll talk about everything that I hope is going to happen when we head up there. As I record this, the 09 version of the open house is basically 2.5 weeks away, and I couldn't be more excited, though April's really gone. So sit back and enjoy this episode. I think you're really going to enjoy hearing what Jason has to say. There is one little bit of house cleaning, though, that I want to take care of. If you are looking at this in iTunes, or if you've gone out to the website, you'll notice that Mr. Nick Bradshaw himself has done the official mascot of the Echoes from the Wrist podcast. So the little guy that we're calling Echo is going to be around for quite a while scaring people who look at him. But all in all, Bradshaw, awesome job. Got to have more Bradshaw. Now we're getting a little bit more. The other thing is, very soon, I'll be announcing that I'm creating a Facebook page for the show. So if you want to become a fan of the show, you can get podcast updates and talk with other fans there. So with that, get ready for the interview. There is one note. At one point in time, Jason and I start talking about OSMs, which is an abbreviation for original source material. You may or may not know that the original Robotech cartoons were not a continuous series. It's actually three series that have been woven together. So the original source material for Southern Cross was called Superdimensional Cavalry Southern Cross. So when we're talking about the OSM, we're talking about the original Japanese cartoons. Now, get ready, sit back, and enjoy the show.
Sharper than a vorpal sword, faster than wired reflexes 3, harder than 7D of knockback, and prettier than a glitter boy, it's RPGpodcast.com. Get all the RPG podcasts you'd ever want to hear.
All right, I'm Chris. Welcome back to the Echoes from the Wrist podcast, and I'm here with
Jason Marker.
And for anyone who may not know who you are, tell us what you do.
I am a new staff writer at Palladium Books.
And what does that entail?
I write a lot about spaceships and giant robots.
That's awesome. I want your job.
It is pretty rad.
And there's also something in your job description about herding small animals, is that correct?
Yeah, I herd cats.
Oh, fantastic.
It's essentially I'm sort of like a liaison for the freelancers.
And you know the freelancers listen to the show and you're okay with that?
Yeah. I think this is a joke that we have amongst ourselves.
Okay. Well, I think I ask you that all the time. I'm like, all right, you're sure the freelancers aren't going to come after you? I would hate to see Jason Richards have to do a freelancer fact about you, sir. now, you've done a couple books now for Palladium. Would you care to share what those are?
Well, I mean, you know, I've done a few Rifter things. I was a contributor for DBs of North America, the Rift book that came out a couple of years ago. It was sort of a freelancer project. And then I contributed to Robotech Shadow Chronicles and wrote the Macross Saga and the Masters Saga.
Very cool. So what was that like, getting to work on such a storied franchise?
When I was a kid, I was just absolutely, you know, infatuated with Robotech, right? You know, I wanted to grow up and be Max Sterling. You know, I would rush home from school and videotape, you know, the episodes. I had, you know, the F-14 that they made for G.I. Joe, the Sky Striker.
Absolutely.
My Sky Striker, I painted like Max's Valkyrie.
Oh, that's fantastic. See,
Because I had the Max action figure, right? So that Max could sit in it, right?
Nice.
I mean, I had all the McKinney books and was just a, you know, complete Robotech, you know.
See, I can actually one-up you on that one because I used to use my the Transformer that was the F-14. I used to use that as a Veritech. Oh, yeah. Well,
you know that's what he was, right? Jetfire was a he was actually the VF-1J. Or no, I'm sorry, the VF-1S.
Right, I knew that, actually.
Yeah, he's just a recolor of that model.
They looked almost identical, and I think I loved Jetfire that much more just because it was Robotech.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Although, you know, I've come to find that when it comes to robots, I'm kind of weird since I also loved GoBots, but that's another story.
But yeah, I mean, you know, working on Robotech was very surreal. Because I was essentially writing primary canon for a cartoon I watched when I was a kid.
Yeah, and I'm not really jealous because of that, by the way. So go ahead.
No, it was a lot of fun. It was a great challenge. I just had a great time doing it. You know, I'm sort of looking forward to doing a couple of more Robotech projects towards the end of the year.
And so let's go into some of the work that you put into the books, because obviously it involved a lot of watching Robotech cartoons, which must have been a chore for you.
It was an absolute chore, and I also had to suffer through playing Robotech Battlecry over and over and over again. Yeah, I watched a lot of Robotech cartoons, and then I also did a lot of other research for it, because you know, so when I you know when I went at Macross. You know, Macross is sort of the way it strikes me is sort of a story about the Navy, right? And it's a war drama set on an aircraft carrier. It just happens to be an aircraft carrier in space with lasers.
Yay, lasers.
So, you know, I did a lot of sort of naval research on ships, you know, aircraft carriers. I did a lot of research on, the F-18 and the F-14. For the Valkyrie,
right, which can both land on an aircraft carrier.
They're both carrier based fighters,
right?
You know, speaking of the Valkyrie, that was one of the things I wrote last.
Really,
the Valkyries are so iconic, and I had them statted out, you know, but I didn't have any of the flavor written for them, and you know, I had to keep coming at it from different angles. Because they, you know, they are so iconic,
right?
And I wanted to do it right the first time.
So Macross Saga goes off without a hitch, or kind of. I mean, it gets put together and is a really impressive book. And so then you get the opportunity to also write Army of Southern Cross, aka Masters Saga.
Well, what's funny is I started Masters before I started Macross.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
It was just one of those things where I was writing Masters. I started Masters at the beginning of last year, right after Shadow Chronicles.
Okay.
It was just one of those things where we sort of shuffled things around at the office, and I started working on Macross instead because it needed to come out first, obviously.
Sure, sure.
I sort of put aside Masters for, you know, the couple of months that I was writing Macross, and then, you know, went back to it.
Wow, that's pretty cool. So did you have the same trouble with the Spartus hover tank that you did with the Veritech?
No, the four mecha for the four variable mecha in Southern Cross, I just dashed right off because I knew, you know, the hover tank is iconic, but I don't want to say I had a better feel for it, but I almost felt more comfortable with it.
I don't know. I'm speaking from personal experience. It's not quite as iconic as the Veritech.
As the Valkyrie.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I guess... I don't know.
I mean, the hover tank is really only in... You know, can I call it Army of Southern Cross or the Master Saga?
Sure.
Whereas you see a Valkyrie or a variable fighter really carried throughout Invid and.
Well, I mean, there were variable fighters in Masters too.
Right, but the Logan and the Ajax don't get the same.
They don't get the same play as the Valkyrie and the Alpha.
Right. Exactly.
Fair enough.
Okay, so I was just, I don't know if that contributed or not, but...
Well, I guess the hover tank seems more approachable to me.
Because it's more closely based on things that are, you could go out and see?
Well, no, I mean, I could go to the Kalamazoo Air Zoo and see an F-14. The hover tank is more approachable. It was less intimidating to write the hover tank than it was to write the Valkyrie.
So with the Macross Saga, you looked at it sort of as a naval carrier drama. What was the angle you took with Masters?
It's, you know, the Army, right? It's the Army and the Air Force.
Okay.
You know, where Macross to me was the Navy and the Marine Corps, you know, Masters is the Army and the Air Force.
And so how does that color the way you wrote Masters instead of Macross?
I read more Army things. You know, I did more research on the Army and, you know, different, you know, the different sorts of, you know, armored cav and air cav and straight leg infantry and mechanized infantry and all that kind of stuff. You know, really, you know, didn't read as much Navy and Marine Corps stuff and read more Army and Air Force stuff.
But when you approached the book in writing it, did it color the way you wrote the text still?
Yeah. I guess I wanted it to, I don't know, it's hard to explain. I'm still not really good at explaining the way I work. With Macross is sort of a, you know, a big sweeping story, right? And you have these sort of larger than life characters and, you know, the backdrop is set against space, right? The backdrop of the story is set against this huge alien armada and this one lone ship and these sort of desperate running battle, and the backdrop is Jupiter and Mars, and Southern Cross is more
human.
It's more human. It's more human scale. It's grittier.
Right.
And these people that were left behind, the peoples of the United Earth government after the Reconstruction, and the members of the Army of the Southern Cross, and how they were left behind by the Expeditionary Force. How their attitudes would be colored by that.
Yeah, I was going to say that it seems like the Southern Cross series is really kind of the story of Bowie and his relationship with the alien girl.
Musica.
Thank you, Musica. And, you know, sort of the relationship between Dana and Bowie and Dana and Nova. And really, those are sort of the turning points of the story. You get a lot of fighty bits, but, you know, it's their story.
It's also the story of, the Supreme Commander and the General.
Well, Emerson, yeah. Although I have to say that, at least in the McKinney novels, and I'm probably going to butcher his name because I've read it more than I've heard it, but Leonard or Leonard?
Leonard, yeah.
Leonard, yeah, okay. Anatole Leonard is kind of a jackass in the books, and I think that one of the things that I like about what you did with Masters is you gave him a reason to be a jackass.
Right. Well, I mean, what we have to remember about the McKinney books is they're secondary continuity now.
Yes. Yes.
You know, they are not canon anymore.
Yep.
You know, when I looked at Leonard and I looked at what he had to work with, right? And I looked at the way that, you know, Superdimensional Cavalry Southern Cross was sort of stuck in the middle between Macross and Mospita. And why are these mechas so different? Why is it all non-variable battleoids and variable ground mecha? And the sort of, you know, the space fleet and the, you know, the variable aircraft, the variable fighter craft are sort of given short shrift.
Right.
You know, why is that? Well, because, you know, Leonard's an infantry guy. You know, he's a ground man. When I talked to Tommy a lot about how, you know, how the ASC and the UEG worked and, you know, who was in charge and who was responsible for what. And, you know, we got to talking about Supreme Commander Leonard and this sort of new continuity. He was an engineer on Project Excalibur.
Right, to build the first non-variable batloids.
He's a mechanical engineer, that guy. He's not a command officer. He was an officer, but he was an engineer. And I got to thinking, and you've seen Battlestar Galactica.
Sure.
You remember the episode where the ship's engineer got put in charge of the Pegasus?
Right.
And he's no good at that job. Right.
Right.
But he's going to do it, damn it. And, you know, at the end, he has that sort of, you know, brave sacrifice because he's actually, you know, he goes back to the engine room. And that's sort of how I saw Supreme Commander Leonard. You know, I felt like the whole idea behind Master Saga is a bunch of people doing things that they were not trained to do with equipment that it was not designed to do that. Supreme Commander Leonard, you know, and that's very compelling and they're very sympathetic. You know, it's like they were supposed to just stay there and keep everything under control.
Right.
And the hunters and the expeditionary force were going to take all that shiny technology and all those shiny new ships and they were going to fly to Tyrol and they were going to kick down the master's door and, you know, they were going to fix things. They were going to take the fight to the Robotech masters. Well, haha. Pass like ships in the night, and the masters show up on Earth while the expeditionary force is gone.
Right.
Army of the Southern Cross wasn't set up to deal with that. And so they rose to the challenge. They did what they had to do. They went to war with the army they had and did a good job of it. And that's what I liked about that story.
Yeah, and I think that really comes out in the text as you've presented it. Certainly far more than anything else I've ever encountered with, you know, Army of the Southern Cross.
I mean, I really like Southern Cross.
Yeah, it's probably my second favorite. I never really got into Next Generation or New Generation that much.
Right, yeah, we spoke about that earlier.
Yeah, although, you know, I think that there were some good parts to it, but I certainly think that, I don't know, the thing is with Southern Cross is it just feels so different because it is kind of, no.
Well, it is very different. I mean, do you know much about the original source material?
A little bit, only what I've read on Wikipedia.
Yeah, I mean, it takes place on another planet.
Yeah.
That planet, Glory, that they're on, you know, from the OSM, has two moons. So the Harmony Gold people had to go back and erase one of those moons in the cells by hand.
Nice.
Yeah.
All right, so hold on, let me stop you for a minute. Tell everyone what the OSM is, just in case, for some reason they don't know.
The OSM of Master Saga is a show called Superdimensional Cavalry Southern Cross. SDC Southern Cross was made by the same company that made Superdimensional Fortress Macross and Superdimensional something-something Orgus.
Yep.
That's why you see Orgus Mecha in Macross. Because it was this kind of, ha-ha, look, you know, sort of like an inside joke. Superdimensional Cavalry Southern Cross was a very unpopular cartoon in Japan and was originally supposed to be something like 20 or 30 episodes longer.
Wow.
And was just cut. You guys are canceled. And so the writers sort of had to scramble and make an ending.
Sure.
It's related by blood to Macross. It doesn't look anything like it.
Gotcha. Okay. So let me ask you a question then, because you kind of said, you know, go through the text and keep an eye on out for things. What was the Spartus hover tank designed for?
Initially?
Yes.
Do you want me to quote from the text?
Medium. Is it a secondary support vehicle? Is it a medium strike tank? Is it an all-purpose tank? Or was it originally designed for long-range reconnaissance?
It's an infantry fighting vehicle.
Okay.
It's a, you know, a one-man infantry fighting vehicle.
Right.
You know, it's not exactly a Stryker or Bradley, but, you know, the way I sort of set it up, and I should double check to make sure that, you know, this is the way that it shook out, was that, you know, initially the Spartus was going to be a recon vehicle.
Right.
And then they hung this huge 120mm smoothbore on it, this Rheinmetall gun. And they're like, hey, this thing does a great job as an infantry fighting vehicle.
Sure.
And that's why they sort of split it with the Myrmidon and made the Myrmidon a recon vehicle. And the Spartus is, you know, more a light armored vehicle.
Gotcha.
You know, much. I don't want to say it's like a direct analog to the Bradley, but I think it almost does a lot of, it sort of does a lot of the same work as a Bradley.
Okay, I was reading through the text, and there was a couple different places where its role seems to get bigger and bigger throughout the text. So I thought I'd trip you up on that. But
well, I mean, it does. You know, that's the thing, because they realize it can do. Hey, it can do this. You know, oh, you know, we didn't realize it would do this, but now that we've got it in testing, we've got a test bed.
Yeah.
Like, oh, geez, all right, well, yeah.
One of the things that you mentioned earlier, too, was you had talked to Tommy. Who's Tommy?
Oh, I'm sorry. Tommy Yoon is the creative director at Harmony Gold. I'm pretty sure he's the creative director. He's the boss of Robotech.
Okay, and so everything that you've put into this book, you had to run by him?
Every word that I write is vetted by Tommy Yoon and his partner, Steve Yoon.
Steve Yoon? Yoon, okay.
Tommy Yoon and Steve Yoon.
So basically everything that you're writing into these books is official canon then, if it's been vetted by those guys?
I guess so, yeah. It would be primary continuity.
Nice. That's got to be a pretty interesting responsibility, huh?
See above under, I wrote the Valkyries last.
Right? Good point, yeah.
I dove right into... You know what the easiest thing for me to write in Macross was?
The OCCs?
No, the non-variable fighters. In Macross, not in Masters.
Right, right.
Yeah, the non-variable fighters and the helicopters. And the AWACS jets and the cargo jet, you know.
Yeah, because that stuff's not really that critical to the setting.
But that's the kind of stuff that I like, support vehicles. And God, I love helicopters.
Were you a fan of military history or military drama before, you know, other than MASH?
I have been for years.
I was going to say, it really comes through in a lot of your writing.
My family's got a tradition of military service. My dad's father, my grandfather, and his brother served in the Navy in World War II. My mother's stepmother and her sisters were Waves during the war. My dad's older brother, Paul, is a combat-wounded Marine Corps veteran from Vietnam. My dad and my mother's brother served towards the end of Vietnam, but they were never put in country. My dad was a combat engineer. My uncle Jim was a security policeman in the Air Force. They were both Air Force guys. So that's sort of, you know, that's kind of a long shadow in my family. When I was a kid, my whole plan was I was going to go into the Air Force Academy when I graduated high school, and I was going to be an F-16 pilot, and I was going to rise to the rank of major by the time I was 36 and become an astronaut. And then I discovered you had to be good at math, which pretty much scuttled that. But yeah, you know, I've always been a fan of military history and military drama, and one of the side effects of my doing this kind of writing and doing this research is the fact that I get to go to the used bookstore and buy tons and tons and tons of books about military. So I enjoy military history and I enjoy defense related things and military related things. So
doing these books, having that military background to fall back on must have been nice, if not comfortable.
Well, I mean, you know, it's not like I'm an expert. It was still a lot of work.
Sure.
But it felt good to do it. And you're right, it did feel comfortable. And one of the things I had in mind when I was writing the books, when I wrote the Mecha for Shadow Chronicles, and when I wrote Macross and Southern Cross, is I want these books to be sort of, you know, like bang up awesome Robotech. But I also sort of wanted them to read like, you know, Jane's All the World's Variable Fighters, you know, 2018, you know, issue. You know, I wanted it to read sort of like Jane's Defense Weekly. I don't know how close I got to that, but I wanted it to be sort of a combination between kind of a cool narrative and, you know, sort of nuts and bolts. And then, you know, trying to strike a balance between my obsessive attention to detail and making things playable.
Okay, cool. So does this love of military stories, knowledge, whatever you want to call it, books, learning history, lead you then to Warpath?
Yeah. Jeff, you know, talking to Jeff, you know, getting a feel for the game. You know, we don't really have a modern combat game.
Right.
And, you know, being turned loose on Warpath, which is like one of the 18 things I'm working on right now, has been a lot of fun. And it has allowed me to really sort of indulge my obsessive attention to detail, my obsessive need for detail.
Nice. And so I brought it up. Let's talk a little bit about it. Warpath is...
rad.
Awesome.
Warpath is a modern combat game where the players are members of an extremely shady, quasi-governmental wetwork squad. Essentially, they are professional murderers. And they are culled from the... they are called from the four branches of the military, from, you know, the more elite special forces units like Marine Scout Sniper and Pararescue, Air Force Pararescue, and, you know, Army Delta and Navy SEALs. The characters are also culled from police forces and repentant criminals.
Nice.
And they are, you know, they work domestically. And they go in and they deal with things that other agencies are unwilling or unable to deal with.
Gotcha.
They do it any way that they need to. You know, they could roll in and just wipe out, you know, a criminal gang. Or they could move into another territory and run them out, take their turf, take their customers, you know, screw up their business. That kind of thing. They're not all about kicking in doors and shooting people in the head. You know, they will use every means, you know, whatever means necessary, they will use every available resource to do their job. So it's going to be pretty sweet. I'm pretty excited about working on it.
Any idea when we can expect to start hearing about that? Or is it just kind of just something you're sort of thinking about right now?
No, I mean, you know, Jeff and I mean, I'm not the primary author on this, on Warpath.
Oh, okay.
This is Jeff Hansen's baby.
Okay.
So, you know, because it's based on his novel. So Jeff is writing, he's doing the heavy lifting. What I'm doing is the back end. You know, I'm doing OCCs and I'm doing rules and I'm doing, you know, that kind of stuff. Sort of the nuts and bolts.
I see. Because you've got a little bit of experience with doing that kind of stuff now.
Jeff, the sum total of Jeff's role-playing experience is playing in a game with Carmen Belair once.
Oh, no.
And playing in my Beyond the Supernatural game for three sessions, because we just start.
Yeah, I was just sure that you were going to say that the sum total was him playing in Carmen's Kill Fest, dying immediately, and deciding he never wanted to play role-playing games again. I was just waiting for that.
Well, he did die in Carmen's game.
Well, everybody dies in Carmen's game. I didn't, right. But everybody else did.
Right, because that's sort of the idea, right?
Right.
Yeah, he's done more role-playing with me than with anybody.
Nice.
So I invited him to sit at my table because he's never played before and he needs to really get an idea of how this works. Plus, my BTS game is a Detroit police officer game and he is a Detroit police officer.
Yeah, that dude scared me to death when I was at Moving House.
Why?
I don't know. It's just this guy shows up I don't know if he was just lost in thought, but he was just kind of like, Kevin's being here. I'm like...
He was giving you his cough.
He was.
He was totally giving you Officer Jeff Hansen.
Yeah, he was. He was totally. And that's exactly what it was. And I'm just like, okay. I'm just like pointing him to Kevin, and like I guess I led him into Kevin's office. I'm like, Kevin, there's an officer who'd like to talk to you. And next thing I know, like he and Jeff are like hugging. So
right, Jeff's an awesome guy.
Seemed like a really nice dude. Once he stopped playing cop, yeah, he But yeah, I shan't forget that anytime soon.
Right.
Yes, so. All right, so is there anything else that we missed out on that you want to bring up about any of the stuff you do?
I don't know. Do you have any more questions about the Robotech books?
Actually, I got a question that's been bugging me forever. This is not anything you did. It's just something that I've noticed in several Palladium books. You've got all the different ammunition types listed in the rules for like the Spartus main cannon, right? So I can fire, and I'm trying to pull it up right now, just so I
have the book right here.
Okay. So, okay, here it is. The different types of weapons I can, or ammunition I can load, are armor-piercing, fin-stabilized, discarding sabo, 3-6 times 10 MDC, or MD, excuse me. Or I could do the heat rounds, or the impact rounds, both of which are 2-6 times 10. Why would I not want to use the 3-6 times 10 round?
Well, because they're all useful for different things. See, that's the thing. You can't play the game by the numbers. You have to play the game by the situation.
Okay.
Right? So that 3d6 times 10 for the, APF SDS?
Yeah.
Yeah. That does that damage to a very small area.
Gotcha.
The heat rounds?
Uh-huh.
You know, the heat rounds are supposed to do sort of an area effect damage.
Right.
You know, the canister rounds, if you've got a lot of massed infantry,
mm-hmm.
or a lot of massed bioroids, you can shoot the armor piercing,
mm-hmm.
and you can hit one of those bioroids, and the rest of them swarm you and kill you. Or you can chamber a canister round, and you can blow four of them flat on their back and make a hole and get out.
So it really comes down to the situation, a little bit of role-playing and some amount of GM advice. Okay.
The idea is not to do the most damage every time, because you're not always going to have the need to use the armor piercing, for example.
Right.
Or the canister. You know, if you're going up against another armored vehicle, the canister is going to be worthless.
Sure.
Yeah, so it is a lot of role-playing. That part of it is a lot of role-playing, and it's sort of GM work as well.
See, I noticed that, I've had this question, like, ever since the original Macross book with the short-range missiles, because mm-hmm. you've got smoke rounds, and I know why you'd want to pop off a smoke missile, but then, there's a short-range nuclear weapon that does 1d6 times 10, mm-hmm. and I could not figure out a scenario in which I would not want to load those.
Well, here's the deal.
Yeah.
You're playing Macross, right?
Right.
You're probably a lieutenant, okay?
Probably.
You're a first or second level or third level, you're a lieutenant. You don't go to the CAG and tell the CAG that you're going to carry plasma missiles on this mission.
Oh, why not?
Because that's not the way it works. Because the CAG tells you what kind of missiles that you're going to carry depending on depending on what the mission calls for. So, when F-18s are blasted off a carrier deck, they're not always carrying 2,000-pound JDAMs. It's a role-playing thing more than anything.
I was just... that's never been published in any of the books, has it?
What?
Just those kind of little role-playing hints.
I don't believe it has been.
Okay. I'm not going anywhere with this question. I'm just...
Oh, okay.
If anything, I guess I wanted to point out that it's one of those things that, as players, we should... Or, as GMs and players, it's something we should look out for and maybe not always go for the most optimal loadout. Because the one thing that always occurred to me is, it's basically a nuclear weapon. And there's probably going to be ramifications of that in urban combat.
Right, yeah. If you land in, whatever, in some,
Macross City.
Macross City, and you start unloading reflex missiles everywhere. Yeah, the mayor's not going to be real happy with you. Because you will have just rendered large swaths of the city uninhabitable.
But the enemy's dead. Isn't that what really matters?
Let me tell you a little story about consequences of players' actions.
Don't you just love a cliffhanger? Don't you want to know what Jason has to say about the consequences of players' actions? Well, you're going to have to find out in episode 15 of Echoes from the Rifts, which I solemnly swear will be out before I go to the open house. I'm really trying to do this 2 episodes a month thing, and it's not as working well as I'd like. But anyway, again, thank you very much to Nick Bradshaw for putting together our new logo. Thanks for listening. And remember, when people ask you how you know so much about Playdium Books staff writers, you tell them you heard it as echoes.
Some of the music tonight was provided by the Podshow PodSafe Music Network. Check it out at music.podshow.com. This episode of the Echoes from the Rifts podcast is copyrighted Palladium Books Incorporated, all rights reserved. Megaverse, Palladium Books, Rifts, and other titles and names are registered trademarks of Palladium Books Incorporated and are used with their permission. Opinions expressed by the interviewer and the individual interviewed are not those of Palladium Books.